This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Magnolia Nights. Written by Ashley Farley. Performed by Rebecca Gibble, Rachel Jacobs, and Stephen Minash. Chapter 1. Ellie. Ellie approached the antebellum mansion with caution. 34 years had passed since she'd last been here. Time had not been kind to the house, as evidenced by the paint peeling and sheets off the wood siding and rotten newel posts on the first and second floor porches. With Pixie dancing around at her feet, she climbed the brick steps and removed the brass key from under the mat, where the attorney had instructed that she'd find it. After a struggle with the jammed lock, the key finally engaged, and she swung open the oversized paneled door. Standing stock still on the threshold, she stared down the wide center hallway. Memories drifted toward her, and her knuckles turned white as she gripped the heavy molding of the doorframe. She heard echoes of voices, some demanding and others more soft-spoken, and saw snapshots of the people who had once lived and worked in the house. Her mother and grandmother, Sally Bell the cook, Maddie the maid, and Abraham, the old black man they referred to as the chauffeur, but who was really a jack-of-all-trades. Who was the little girl with dark curly hair and eyes as black as a moonless night? A playmate? A distant cousin or close family friend? In this memory, Ellie and the girl were huddled together behind an open door, hiding from something or someone. Were they playing a game? She'd spent endless hours and countless dollars working with a therapist to summon these memories from the deep recesses of her mind, where they'd been locked away for most of her life. The voice inside her head grew louder, cautioning her not to let the memories out. When she backed out of the doorway and onto the porch, the voice escalated to a scream that warned her to get out of Charleston while she still had the chance. But where would she go? There was nothing waiting for her in San Francisco. That chapter in her life had come to an end. She slipped the key back under the mat, and, inhaling a deep breath, she wheeled her suitcase across the threshold and closed the door behind her. Pixie was eager to stretch her tiny legs after being cooped up in her carrier during the long flight from California and the drive into town from the airport. Ellie followed along as her little dog's button nose led them from one room to the next. To the best of her recollection, the furnishings hadn't changed since she was last here as a 6-year-old, the day the father she'd never met came to claim her. Even back then, everything had been faded and frayed. She found the dark fabrics oppressive, in shades of browns, burgundies, and blues, and thought the heavy furniture, enormous antique pieces with little detail and zero charm, belonged in an abandoned Scottish castle. Ellie remembered the grape juice stain on the Queen Anne sofa in the living room. She'd been punished for much lesser crimes than spilling the juice. A muddy footprint on the kitchen floor, leaving the lid off the cookie jar, hiding under her mother's sickbed. When Pixie grew bored with the living room, she ventured back to the center hallway toward the rear of the house. The red damask wallpaper that lined the walls of the hall seemed more suited to a parlor in a brothel. As a child, Ellie had never been allowed to go near the antique grandfather clock. Now, she felt a particular satisfaction in opening the glass door and nudging the minute hand with the tip of her finger. The gears sprang into action and filled the hallway with the steady ticking and talking of the seconds as the decades slipped away. Had the clock ever kept decent time? She found Pixie in the dining room, looking at a spot on the oriental rug at the base of her grandmother's chair. Uh-oh, don't do that. It might make you sick. She scooped up the wiggling Maltese and tucked her under her arm. They'd eaten every meal in this dining room, with her grandfather's beady eyes leering down at them from his oil portrait above the mahogany sideboard. She knew little about the grandfather who'd passed away years before she was born. His name had rarely been mentioned by anyone in the house. Ellie could hear her grandmother's stern voice instructing her to finish her dinner.
"There will be no dessert for you, young lady, until you've eaten your piece."
Night after night, Ellie had been forced to choke down every last pea. To this day, the smell of peas summoned the taste of bile. Ellie had neither seen nor heard from her grandmother in 34 years, since her father had taken her to live with him in California. Perhaps her grandmother's declining health had prevented her from getting in touch with her all these years. She wanted to believe her grandmother had loved her. She'd left Ellie her entire estate. Surely that was a sign her grandmother still cared about her, that she hadn't forgotten her. Though, if the woman had been as cruel as her memories suggested, why did Ellie even care how her grandmother felt about her? She was desperate, however, to know whether her mother had ever loved her. There was so much Ellie didn't remember, and her father refused to tell her about her past. When she sat down in her grandmother's chair at the head of the table, Ellie experienced an odd sensation, a powerful awareness of something or someone monumentally important to her that sent a shiver down her spine and left her gasping for air. Gripping her dog, she squeezed her eyes shut tight. "Why can't I remember?" she called out to the empty room. Her therapist had diagnosed her with dissociative amnesia. Her memory bank wasn't empty. She remembered plenty of things about her childhood. But her inability to recall the traumatic events she'd experienced in this house had caused chronic headaches, stomach issues, and insomnia all her life. What could possibly have happened to her here that caused such irreparable damage to her psyche? When she told her father she was moving to Charleston, he warned her to stay away. Maybe she should have listened to him. But the therapist thought that being back in this house might trigger her memories. Somehow, some way, she was determined to discover the piece of the past that would make her whole. The sound of the back door closing and the squishing of rubber-soled shoes against the linoleum floor brought Ellie out of her chair. She pushed open the swinging door and passed through the butler's pantry, a rectangular room lined with storage cabinets that separated the kitchen from the dining room. She spotted Maddie, depositing two grocery bags on the formica counter. Deep lines had developed in her face, and her hair had gone gray, but Ellie recognized the woman she'd once known from the high cheekbones and bridge of freckles across her nose. How old had Maddie been back then? Surely not more than 25 or 30. The housekeeper set her dark eyes on Pixie.
"Mrs. Pringle don't allow no pets in the house."
"Based on what her attorney tells me, she's no longer in a position to object." Of all the people who'd been a part of her life back then, Ellie remembered the most about Maddie, even more than she remembered about her own mother. The housekeeper had paid special attention to the skinny little girl with strawberry blonde pigtails. She'd bandaged her boo-boos, nursed her when she got sick, and snuck her treats from the kitchen, brownies and fudge and frosted sugar cookies. Had her grandmother's stringent demands hardened Maddie over time? She would have to find a way to soften her up. Setting the dog down on the floor, Ellie located a saucer in one of the cabinets, filled it with water, and placed it on the ground in front of Pixie. She turned to face Maddie. Nothing's changed around here, including you. She gave the woman's stiff body a hug, and when she pushed away, she was rewarded with a tentative smile tugging at the corners of the woman's pale lips.
It's good to see you, Miss Eleanor.
Ellie's memories of her mother were fleeting glimpses of a willowy redhead with wide-set olive-colored eyes. They reminded her so much of herself, she often wondered if these visions were figments of her imagination, intended to satisfy her yearning for the mother she'd known for only 6 brief years. On the top of the list of things she'd yearned to ask her mother was why she'd name her innocent baby after a strict old woman like Eleanor Pringle. Please call me Ellie.
All right then, Miss Ellie.
Maddie set about emptying her grocery bags.
Mr. Calhoun called earlier. He said to tell you he's going to be a few minutes late. There's a casserole warming in the oven for your dinner, and a fresh pitcher of sweet tea in the refrigerator. I picked up some orange juice and coffee cream for your breakfast.
She unloaded the groceries into the ancient refrigerator.
I don't know your food habits yet, but if you make out a list, I'll go back to the market in the morning.
I appreciate your efforts, Maddie, but I can do my own shopping. But thank you for the casserole. After my long trip, I'm relieved not to have to worry about dinner. Maddie closed the refrigerator and folded the paper bags in half. She set her lips in a firm line.
That leaves me out of a job then, don't it? If you're planning to do your own cooking and cleaning.
Ellie wondered if she could afford to keep Maddie on. If she couldn't afford to pay her, Ellie couldn't afford to live in the house. As long as I stay in this house, I want you to stay here with me. I won't know how long that will be until I meet with Mr. Calhoun about the estate. You worked for my grandmother for a long time, Maddie. If, for some reason, I decide to sell the house, I'll make sure you're well taken care of. The tension left the old woman's body.
That's mighty kind of you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Ellie refilled Pixie's saucer with water. I'll make out my list and leave it on the counter for you in the morning.
Yes. I put clean linens on all the beds upstairs, and towels in the baths. They're threadbare. I'm sorry about that. Lots of things are run down around here.
Maddie appeared embarrassed, as though the burden of maintaining the household fell solely on her shoulders. Don't worry. You and I will address everything that's worn out around here in good time. Ellie hoped she'd have the means to address these things. The attorney had told her little about her inheritance, only that her grandmother had left her a sizable estate. She'd spent an afternoon doing online research on the real estate market in downtown Charleston. Even in its dilapidated state, because of its close proximity to the waterfront, the house was worth millions. What she didn't know was whether her grandmother had left her a bank account to go along with the house. How long was my grandmother sick? Mr. Calhoun didn't say.
A few weeks at the most. She didn't suffer none. Don't you worry about that. The stroke left her in a coma. Mr. Calhoun and me, we made sure she had plenty of help to keep her comfortable to the end.
Maddie removed her handbag from the pantry and walked toward the back door.
All right, then. If you don't need me any more today, I'll be on my way.
The house was quiet again after Maddie's departure, except for the sound of Pixie's tongue lapping the water out of her bowl and the distant ticking of the clock in the front hall. Once she'd emptied the bowl for the second time, the dog looked up at Ellie with expectant eyes.
What say, Pixie? Shall we continue our tour?
Needing no further encouragement, the dog pranced on ahead of Ellie down the short hallway leading off the kitchen. She came to an abrupt stop in the doorway to the Florida room. Afternoon sunlight streamed in through a wall of grimy windows onto more heavy furniture and dark fabrics. Bookshelves lined the wall opposite the windows, and the wall facing the door featured a full-length portrait of her grandmother, her face set in a scowl, even as a young woman. Pixie growled and scampered away. Ellie snickered. I don't blame you. She scares me, too. They continued their exploration upstairs, starting in the gloomy bedroom at the back of the house that had once been her mother's. A flashback took Ellie by surprise. The soft mound of her mother's body in the mahogany poster bed, rising and falling as she drew her last breaths. She opened the door connecting to the adjacent nursery, the only way in or out of the room. As a child, she'd felt comforted knowing that if anyone wanted to get to her, they'd have to pass through her mother's bedroom first. Only slightly bigger than a closet, the room was spartan with white walls, an oval-shaped rag rug on the floor in shades of brown, and a child-size iron bed. She recalled lying in that bed night after night, listening to her mother's soft moans, overwhelmed by the loneliness and confusion of a small child with no father, a dying mother, and an uncertain future. On her way back through her mother's room, she smelled a pungent odor, the stench of mildew and rot, that she hadn't noticed a moment ago. Ellie closed the door on her memories and wandered back down the hall to the corner bedroom in the front of the house, the guest room reserved for guests who never visited. Unlike the rest of the house, the guest room was cheerful, with a green patterned carpet and velvet draperies that matched the bouquets of yellow roses in the wallpaper. An antique gilded bed with a fluffy white duvet and square-shaped down pillows graced the center of the room. She had no bad memories associated with this room. Feeling at peace in here, she decided to claim the guest room as her own. Pixie scurried off before Ellie could grab her, back down the hallway and around the staircase banister to her grandmother's room. As a child, Ellie had been forbidden to go anywhere near this room. It was strictly her grandmother's domain. The bed, a walnut monstrosity with turned posts, an intricately carved headboard, and a patchwork quilt of Betsy Ross vintage, took up most of the room. Sensible black dresses and shoes filled the closet, and a collection of sterling powder jars, perfume sprayers, and brushes cluttered the marble-topped chest of drawers. The sound of a car door slamming on the street prompted Ellie to wander over to the French doors leading to the second-floor porch. Lifting back the velvet curtain panel, she observed a silver-haired man, presumably the attorney, remove his suit jacket and leather document folder from the passenger side of a Mercedes sedan before making his way up the short sidewalk. She turned away from the window to go greet him, but when she crossed the room to the door, she discovered it locked. She didn't remember closing the door behind her when she came in. She glanced down at her dog, who was staring at the door with bared teeth. "What's wrong, Pix?" Pixie offered a low growl in response. The same vile odor she'd smelled in her mother's room assaulted her nose, and she yanked frantically on the knob without success. She bent over to inspect the hardware, but could detect no locking mechanism. The doorbell rang several times. She hurried back to the window, where she discovered the knob on the French door was also locked. On closer inspection, she realized the door had been painted shut and all the hardware removed. Strange. Why would anyone permanently seal access to such a lovely balcony? She knocked on the glass, but the leaf blower in the yard next door prevented Mr. Calhoun from hearing her. She watched him ring the doorbell again and clang on the brass knocker before searching under the mat for the key. When she heard the tapping of his leather soles on the hardwood floor downstairs, she returned to the door and began pounding on it, first with her palm, and then her fist. Her heart was throbbing and sweat dripping down her back by the time Mr. Calhoun reached her.
"What happened?"
he asked.
"Did you lock yourself in?"
She held her hand out toward the doorknob. "There's no lock on the inside. How did you get it open?" He hunched his shoulders.
"I simply turned the knob, and it opened right up."
"I don't understand." She examined both sides of the knob. "Why wouldn't the knob turn when there's no lock on the door?"
"I can think of any number of reasons in a house this old."
He held his hand out to her.
"You must be Ellie. I'm Bennett Calhoun."
She gave his hand a quick squeeze. "Do you know if my grandmother passed away in this room?" she asked, still preoccupied with the door. He chuckled.
"Please call me Bennett. And yes, your grandmother spent her last weeks in this room with a host of round-the-clock nurses. But I wouldn't go worrying about ghosts just yet. We'll get the carpenter to look at it when he addresses all the other things that need to be fixed around here."
His explanation sounded logical to Ellie, but she closed the door behind her just the same. Chapter 2. Ellie. Ellie had spoken to Bennett Calhoun several times on the phone in the month following her grandmother's death, but she was not prepared for his extraordinary good looks. Tall, lean, and tan, in an impeccably tailored pale gray suit. She reminded herself that she'd sworn off men, and this particular one was old enough to be her grandfather. She was parched after the trauma of being locked in her grandmother's bedroom. "Can I offer you some tea?" she asked as they descended the stairs, even though she would have much preferred a glass of chilled white wine.
Never say no to tea, as long as it's sweet and iced with a taste of lemon.
In the kitchen, Ellie retrieved the pitcher of tea from the refrigerator and located two glasses. She filled the glasses with ice and tea and handed one to Bennett. When he started toward the Florida room, she suggested they go to the library to talk.
"After you."
He held his hand out, gesturing for her to lead the way.
"I was heading that way out of habit. The few times I met with your grandmother, we sat in the Florida room. I got the impression she spent most of her time back there."
Ellie didn't remember much about the library. Maybe that's why she felt more relaxed in there. She took a seat on the sofa and Bennett in a leather chair across the marble coffee table from her. "I find this room more comfortable. The Florida room gives me the willies." A chill crawled across her skin, and she untied the gray cotton sweater from around her neck. He chuckled.
"It's the eyes."
She froze one bare arm in the sweater. "I beg your pardon?"
"Your grandmother's eyes in her portrait. I've noticed them before. They unnerve me in a way I can't quite put my finger on. I have portraits of ancestors hanging all over my house, but none of them affect me quite like Eleanor's."
She considered this as she slipped her other arm in the sweater and pulled it tight over her sundress. Ellie had studied portraiture as part of the MFA program at UC Berkeley. It wasn't the way her grandmother's eyes, as gray as a stormy day, followed her around the room. That much was expected from a master portrait artist. "I know exactly what you mean, Bennett. Her eyes convict and sentence you to death before you've even committed the crime." He tilted his head back and laughed.
"Spoken like a true artist. We're gonna get along just fine, you and me. I must introduce you to my wife. She was impressed with your work when I showed her your website. We fancy ourselves collectors, even though neither of us has a lick of talent."
"I'd like to meet her," Ellie said, taking a sip of her tea.
"I can see the two of you as friends. As for the portrait, if I were you, I'd stuff it in a closet and forget about it."
Ellie studied his face and realized he was being serious. "I'm not sure I can do that to my grandmother's portrait when I'm living in her house."
"It's your house now, Ellie, to do with as you like."
Pixie jumped onto the sofa beside her and buried her muzzle beneath Ellie's thigh. Bennett smiled at Pixie.
Your grandmother would roll over in her grave if she saw your dog making herself at home on her velvet sofa.
It was Ellie's turn to laugh. And I quote, "It's your house now, Ellie, to do with as you like." He held his glass out to her.
Touché.
A bemused expression crossed Ellie's face. Didn't you tell me my grandmother's body was cremated? If so, that would make it difficult for her to roll over in her grave.
A figure speech, of course. Eleanor's ashes are in an urn on the mantel in the living room.
Ellie imagined her grandmother's soul yearning for release from the confines of a decorative urn. Did she leave instructions on where she wanted her ashes spread?
Not that I recall. I'll leave that to you to decide.
Bennett sat back in his chair, crossed his long legs, and opened his document folder in his lap.
Let's discuss the details of the estate.
He handed her a sheaf of papers and pointed to a number so large it made Ellie's eyes blink shut and her mouth fall open.
Is this some kind of joke? She asked when she discovered her voice again.
Nope. It's all yours to do with as you please. Eleanor lived like Scrooge. She never spent any money on anyone, including herself or the house, as I'm sure you noticed. You can live like Oprah Winfrey and you wouldn't put a dent in your portfolio. It'll take several months to finalize the estate, but you have plenty of money at your disposal until then. Whether or not you realize it, your grandfather was one of the founding fathers at the Peninsula Bank and Trust. Virgil Bates has been handling your grandmother's money for many years.
Bennett handed her a business card.
He's expecting your call.
She clipped the business card to the papers and set them down on the coffee table. Do you have any idea why my grandmother left everything to me? We haven't been in touch in 34 years. Surely she has other family members more deserving. Ellie had often wondered if she had a string of first cousins out in the world somewhere. He shook his silver head.
Your mother was an only child. If there are other family members, distant nieces or nephews, I'm not aware of them.
Did she make any bequests to her staff, or her church, or any non-profit organizations she was fond of?
Again, he shook his head.
Her will is very straightforward. You are the only beneficiary.
Not even for Maddie?
Unfortunately not. I encouraged her to include Maddie in her will, but she refused. In fact, your grandmother never once gave Maddie a raise in all the years she's been working here. If you plan to keep her on, I'd address that issue soon. She's as loyal as they come. I've been giving Maddie annual bonuses to make up for it.
Ellie was moved by his generosity. That's awfully kind of you. I hope the estate reimbursed you.
He chuckled. I added it to my fees. Eleanor never knew the difference.
Tell me, Bennett, how much do you know about my grandmother?
Not that much, actually. She led an active social life in her younger days, but she became a recluse fairly early on. In her 50s, if I had to guess. If you want to know the truth, I was a little afraid of her with that jogging stick of hers always close at hand.
Ellie froze, her glass of tea positioned near her lips. She set the glass back down as she recalled the pain of that wooden stick with its silver tips whacking her thighs. She had a long list of questions for him, but at the moment, only one presented itself to her. What if I want to sell the house? He paused a long minute before responding.
You have every right to sell the house, if that's what you really want to do. But I advise you to think long and hard about it before you make that decision. This house has been in your family for generations, since back before the Civil War. Don't let creepy portraits and sticky doors scare you off. Hire a decorator. Put your own stamp on it. I understand you're an artist. You said the Florida room gives you the willies, but if you think about it, That room would make a wonderful studio with the natural light streaming in through its windows and the magnificent view of the garden. Although, I must say, the garden could use some tending.
When she first learned of her inheritance, Ellie had jumped at the opportunity to move to Charleston. But now that her belongings were in a moving truck making its way across the country, she wondered if she was running away from her heartache over a recent breakup more than she was embracing a chance to start anew. I thought I was ready for a change, but now I'm not so sure.
You're tired, Ellie, and understandably so. You've come a long way in a day.
He consulted his gold wristwatch.
You've been here for only, what, 3 hours? Give it some time. You'll feel more at home once you get settled.
Bennett had a gentle way about him that put Ellie at ease. I'm sure you're right. He drained the rest of his tea and stood to go.
Maddie tells me there are a number of repairs that need to be taken care of right away. Things that can't wait for you to decide whether you want to keep the house or sell it. I would start with the leaky roof. It's hurricane season, and several storms are brewing in the tropics.
He pulled a sheet of computer paper from his folder and handed it to her.
Here's a list of names and phone numbers of the contractors your grandmother used for repairs and maintenance. I added a few of my own. I suggest you let Maddie help you with this. She's very resourceful, and she knows the house better than anyone.
She placed the list along with the stack of papers that made up her grandmother's will on the desk and walked him to the front door.
Shall I have my wife call you for lunch?
Bennett asked when they were on the front porch.
Lucille can provide an introduction to some of the key people in our art world.
Ellie appreciated his kindness. She felt certain she would enjoy his wife's company if she was anything like her husband. His twinkling blue eyes suggested a playful side she hoped she would one day encounter. I would like that very much. So this is what they mean by Southern hospitality. He winked at her.
It can be off-putting for some at first, but you'll get used to it.
Chapter 3. Ellie. Ellie watched Bennett drive away in his Mercedes before turning around to face the house. She stared up at the three stories of a maintenance nightmare. Columns, porch railings, wood siding, and shutters, all susceptible to rot and termites, and all in desperate need of stripping and repainting. Having the windows cleaned alone would cost her a fortune. The foundation shrubs were way overgrown, and the small patch of lawn on both sides of the brick sidewalk appeared to be more weeds than grass. The sidewalk itself was buckling in places. She'd never owned a house before. How would she ever keep up with a money pit like this one? She was pleased to see the brass on the front door, which included a knocker, knob, and mail slot, had all been polished to a shine. She had Maddie to thank for that and so much more. How did she manage all of it at her age? Ellie wandered around the downstairs for another hour before returning to the kitchen. She felt disoriented in her new environment and craved a glass of wine or hard liquor, like bourbon on the rocks, to take the edge off. Her grandmother didn't drink, as evidenced by the lack of alcohol in the house. After a thorough search of the cabinets in the kitchen and the butler's pantry, she finally discovered a dusty bottle of Pinot Noir at the back of the pantry, which was no more than a glorified broom closet with a few shelves to store non-perishable food items. The only thing she could find resembling a wine glass was a set of 4 Waterford sherry glasses in the dining room's built-in china cabinet. She opted for an everyday juice glass instead and filled it to the brim with wine. She recognized the California label, although she'd never visited that particular vineyard. With a hint of cherries, the wine tasted surprisingly smooth. There was nowhere to sit in the kitchen. No bar stools positioned at the counter or chair at the tiny desk area beneath the wall phone. Her grandmother had intended this kitchen for cooking, not loitering. Ellie located a step stool in the pantry, set it up near the paned back door, and sipped her wine as she studied the sliver of lawn outside the window. The Florida room extended out the back of the house, cutting the yard into two sections. The larger garden area, including the bluestone terrace off the Florida room, and this patch of grass that provided enough room to expand the kitchen if she decided to do so. Ellie's favorite place to hang out had been the kitchen in every place she'd ever lived. Come to think of it, she'd spent a lot of time camped out in this very corner by the back door, hiding from her grandmother, who felt it beneath her to enter the part of the house meant for the help. In Glen Park, the neighborhood where she'd grown up in San Francisco, she and her father had met for heart-to-heart talks in the kitchen of their modest home after her stepmother and stepbrothers went to bed. And for the past 5 years, she and Jake had spent most of their evenings together cooking and sipping wines purchased from local boutique wineries and making out in the tiny kitchen of her studio apartment in San Francisco's Mission District. If she stayed in this house, she would remodel the existing kitchen and add on more square footage out back. An island would give her more counter space, and a banquette built into a wall of windows would afford her a sunny place to drink her coffee in the mornings and gather with friends for casual suppers in the evenings. "Slow down, Ellie," she thought. "You're getting ahead of yourself. First, you need to make some friends." For the time being, she'd have to learn to live with the house as it was. She couldn't see herself eating alone at the dining room table. The living room was too formal for much of anything. The library was a cozy spot for curling up on a winter's day, but she found the dark paneling dreary. The Florida room would be ideal, if not for the constant presence of the woman who'd terrified her as a child. Draining the rest of her wine for courage, she folded the step stool and dragged it down the back hallway to the Florida room. Lifting her head high, she stepped over the threshold and marched across the room. Then, teetering on the stool, she wrestled her grandmother's portrait off the wall. She set the portrait on the ground and leaned against it for support while she caught her breath. She looked around and noticed how the paint had yellowed over the years everywhere except where the painting had hung. "I'll need to do something about that," she thought, along with the million other things that need addressing. She carried the large canvas in its ornate gold leaf frame up to her grandmother's bedroom. The door was stuck again, and she had to force it open using her body. She then held the door open with her foot while she maneuvered the portrait inside the room. She leaned it against the wall and quickly shut the door again, brushing the frame's dust off her hands. Returning to the kitchen, she refilled her juice glass with wine and scooped up a heap of the still-warm eggplant casserole onto a small plate. She didn't normally like eggplant, but she found Maddie's recipe with tomato sauce and melted cheese quite tasty. While she ate standing at the counter, feeling guilty for being so mean about her grandmother, she racked her brain for fond memories of Eleanor Pringle. She couldn't think of a single one. Surely those years hadn't been all bad. After eating and realizing with dismay that there was no dishwasher, she rinsed and dried her plate. Ellie found an ink pen and a notepad on the counter beneath the rotary dial wall telephone and took them outside to the front porch. A gentle breeze made her grateful for her lightweight sweater. She sat down on the steps and commenced writing. Her grocery list included red wine and dog kibble. Her list for household repairs was longer. She would call the roofer first about the leaks, followed by the lawn service about bringing the yard back to life, and Goodwill about the furniture from the Florida room she planned to donate. And she would ask Maddie about a handyman who could fix whatever was wrong with her grandmother's bedroom door. She'd had a long day, and the wine had made her sleepy. She decided to turn in early, even though it was still light out and not yet 5 o'clock in California. She went back inside, turned out the lights, and locked the doors. She left the grocery list on the counter for Maddie and wheeled her suitcase upstairs to the guest room. She went to the window and stared out at the people and their pets across the street in the park. From this vantage point, they looked like ants crawling around on the ground. She experienced a sense of déjà vu, of deep sorrow and loneliness. She felt certain she'd stood in this spot many times before, watching the world go by outside her grandmother's house. She reached for the knob on the French door leading to the porch, but, like the one in her grandmother's room, it, too, was sealed shut. There was something more she was supposed to know about that, but she was too tired for it to come to her tonight. She wedged the chair from the dressing table under the doorknob and stretched out on the bed beside Pixie. She doubted sleep would come easily with her mind reeling from so many changes, but she closed her eyes and was out within minutes. At 8 the following morning, she sat bolt upright to the thundering of heavy footsteps pounding the stairs. Chapter 4. Ellie. Maddie banged on her door.
Miss Ellie, Miss Ellie, come quick. Are you awake in there?
Just a minute, Ellie called and rolled out of the bed. She caught a glimpse of her reflection in the antique gilded mirror above the dresser. She looked a sight, with hair matted and makeup smeared. The indigo-blue linen sheath she'd worn on the plane from California, now a wrinkled mess. She pried the chair from beneath the doorknob and swung open the door.
What on earth is wrong, Maddie? I'm sorry to disturb you from your sleep, but we've been robbed, she exclaimed, her right hand pressed against her ample breasts while her left gripped the apron of her old-fashioned gray housekeeper's dress.
Someone done stole Mrs. Pringle's portrait.
Calm down, Maddie. We haven't been robbed. I moved the portrait up here to my grandmother's bedroom. Come, I'll show you.
They walked together to her grandmother's room. I didn't mean to upset you, but to be honest, the portrait makes me feel uneasy, and I wanted it out of the way. Ellie held the bedroom door open while Maddie entered the room. Gripping the bedpost, she took several deep breaths as she stared at the portrait leaning against the wall.
Lord, I thought someone broke in here and burglarized the place.
Lines as thick as railroad ties appeared across her forehead.
But I know what you mean about the painting. I never liked her spooky eyes watching me while I worked, waiting for me to break one of her valuable possessions.
We can both relax a little now that the portrait's tucked away up here. She gave Maddie a minute to calm herself. Since we're here, I might as well ask you. I noticed this door, she knocked on the door for emphasis, has a tendency to stick. Do we have a handyman who can fix it? Maddie let go of her apron and smoothed out the wrinkles.
Oh, no, Miss Ellie. There ain't nothing wrong with that door. That's your grandmother's spirit refusing to leave the house.
Ellie stared at the old woman, waiting for her to admit she was kidding.
I ain't joking, Miss Ellie. We must take the spirit of the newly departed seriously. The Gullah people believe that a spirit ain't at rest until it passes into the afterworld. Mrs. Pringle and I have a battle going on over that door. I open it and she closes it again, sometimes 6 or 8 times a day. We need to keep it open so she'll know it's okay for her to move on to the great beyond.
For the record, Maddie, I don't believe in ghosts. But, hypothetically speaking, what happens if her spirit never leaves?
She'll keep building up energy until, well,
Maddie fanned herself.
It ain't a pretty sight. I've seen spirits work themselves into furies.
They break mirrors and crack floorboards. I even knowed one angry spirit who brought down a whole ceiling.
The rational side of Ellie didn't believe a word the woman said. But there was that other part of her. The part who'd experienced whatever traumatic event she'd experienced all those years ago, that was all ears. Then, by all means, let's keep the door open as much as possible. The sight of her grandmother's black dresses hanging in a neat row in her closet reminded Ellie of prison guard uniforms. Would it help if we got rid of her clothes?
No, ma'am. You can't get rid of her things until her spirit passes.
Ellie sighed. We'll do it your way for now. Maddie exited the room, and Ellie, careful to leave the door open, followed her into the hallway.
Okay, then, Maddie said, placing a hand on the banister. I'll get your breakfast started. How do you like your eggs?
I don't care for eggs today, but thank you. I'll have some coffee and a bowl of fruit. She noticed Pixie at her feet wagging her tail expectantly. But I can get that myself. Do you mind running to the grocery store first thing? I left a list on the counter in the kitchen. I used the last of my travel supply of food. My little friend will be grumpy if I don't feed her soon. Maddie looked over at the dog. What's his name?
Her name is Pixie, Ellie said, picking the dog up and holding her out for Maddie to pet.
Maddie reached over to pet the dog and then snatched her hand back.
Do she bite?
She's never bitten anyone that I know of. Let her sniff your hand. Maddie lifted her fingers to the dog's nose. Pixie sniffed several times and then began licking her fingers. She grinned.
Oh, that tickles.
Haven't you been around dogs, Maddie?
Not cute ones like her, she said, rubbing Pixie's head. The only dogs I ever known were mean.
Ellie waved the dog's paw at Maddie.
This little girl can be shy at first, but she's great company once she gets to know you.
Pixie began to squirm in her arms. I better take her outside before she has an accident. Let me get you some money for the groceries. I believe I left my purse in the kitchen.
I can use a card Mrs. Pringle gave me for household purchases, Maddie said as they descended the stairs together.
That'd be great. I'll straighten all that out at the bank. I hope to meet with them later today.
They parted at the bottom of the stairs, Ellie toward the front door and Maddie to the kitchen. Once Pixie had concluded her business, Ellie showered and dug through her suitcase for a pair of dress shorts and a lightweight cotton sweater. She would need to go shopping soon. The remainder of her wardrobe would arrive with the moving truck, but most of her clothes were geared toward the cooler climate of San Francisco. Maddie had already returned from the market with the dog food when Ellie went back downstairs. After she fed Pixie and devoured a bowl of berries, she took her coffee and her lists to the big desk in the library to make her calls. By the time early afternoon rolled around, she'd accomplished a great deal. The Goodwill truck had already come and gone. She'd requested estimates for painting the exterior of the house from three different contractors. She'd scheduled an appointment at the bank for 3 o'clock that afternoon. She'd spoken to the lawn service about reseeding the grass, trimming the shrubs, and spreading fresh mulch in the beds. And the roofers were currently stomping around on the roof to assess the damage. Her stomach growled, and 10 seconds later, Maddie entered the room with a pimento cheese sandwich, chips, and an icy glass of lemonade. Her grandmother's housekeeper was turning out to be a mind reader as well as a lifesaver. Maddie was on the way out of the door when Ellie stopped her. Maddie, did my grandmother own a car?
No, she didn't go out much.
Maddie turned back around to face her.
I drove her in my car wherever she needed to go. She sold her Cadillac years ago after they took away her driver's license. Ellie froze, her sandwich positioned near her mouth.
Why'd they take away her driver's license?
She ran over a fire hydrant one day on her way home from a doctor's appointment.
Maddie's hands flew to her lips.
I know I shouldn't laugh, but I can still see Mrs. Pringle's face. She was fit to be tied that day.
How'd she manage to run over a fire hydrant? She asked, taking a bite of her sandwich.
She was driving too fast for the speed limit. Tore the whole front end off her Cadillac. Water shot out of the hydrant like Niagara Falls.
Ellie laughed. Okay, that is kind of funny. Maddie grew serious, and tears welled up in her eyes.
That's when they discovered she had cataracts.
She shook her head.
Stubborn old woman refused to have the operation. She was nearly blind when she died.
Ellie had never considered Maddie's feelings for her grandmother. She'd worked for her for more than 40 years. Of course she'd cared about her, regardless of whether she liked her or not. With no family around to take care of Eleanor Pringle, the responsibility had fallen on Maddie alone. Ellie pushed her chair back and came around to the front of the desk. It must have been hard on you watching her deteriorate like that. She gave Maddie's arm a gentle squeeze. Maddie sniffled.
It wasn't always easy, but we managed all right.
Do you think that's why my grandmother ignored the repairs? Because she couldn't see the house was falling down around her?
Trust me, she knew. I'd done told her nearly every single day.
Maddie removed a tissue from her apron pocket and wiped her nose.
I don't mean no disrespect, but your grandmother was stingy with her money.
I'm learning that about her. I understand from Mr. Calhoun that she never gave you a raise. We're changing that right now. How much do you make? Maddie told her, and Ellie tripled the amount. Plus a week's salary bonus at Christmas.
Lord, Miss Ellie, you are too kind.
She dabbed at her eyes with her tissue. You work hard, Maddie, and you were loyal to my grandmother, even though she didn't treat you very well. You deserve to be rewarded. Ellie made a mental note to ask the bank about the credit card Maddie used. Were you able to make any home improvements using the credit card she gave you for household expenses?
Nah, that card was mostly for groceries. And donuts when your grandma got a hankering for Krispy Kreme. But she demanded to see every single receipt. She fussed at me if I overspent. Not that I ever did. I was scared to death of Mrs. Pringle. When her eyesight failed, she asked Mr. Calhoun to read the bills out loud while I was in the room. She reprimanded me right in front of him more than once. She swung that old stick of hers at me.
Maddie snickered.
Of course, by then, she couldn't see well enough to hit me.
Ellie narrowed her green eyes. I remember that stick. Maddie walked over to the fireplace and removed a wooden stick from the mantle.
This belonged to your grandfather.
She handed the jogging stick to Ellie.
Mr. Edwin used it to beat off the dogs on his way to his office or to church, or so I've been told. That was before my time.
She lowered her head and stared at the floor.
It's wrong of me to speak ill of the dead, Miss Ellie. I wanted you to know your grandmother's way, so you'd understand how things got so bad around here. I tried to keep up as best I could.
Ellie ran her hand along the smooth walnut stick. The sterling tips shined as bright as every other metal surface in the house. Thank you for telling me, Maddie. You've done an admirable job of keeping things up despite your limitations. She returned the jogging stick to the mantle. She would use it for kindling the first time she built a fire. Turning her back on the fireplace, she clasped her hands together. I'm going to need your help. I've never owned a house before, and there's so much work to be done around here. Starting with buying a car, she thought. But she'd worry about that later.
You can count on me, Miss Ellie. I know every inch of this house like the back of my hand.
If you have a few minutes, we can brainstorm on what needs to be done, Ellie said, motioning her hand toward two chairs positioned in front of the desk. Maddie nodded, and Ellie returned to her seat behind the desk.
I noticed they hauled off the furniture from your grandma's sunny room this morning, Maddie said as she eased herself into the chair.
A moving truck is coming with my things from California tomorrow. That seemed like the most logical place to put some of them.
Be nice to freshen things up around here.
Will you get rid of all Miss Pringle's books?
Not until I've had a chance to go through them. Ellie was eager to comb through the shelves. She suspected some of the books were valuable first editions, and that some, maybe, contained her grandmother's personal documents as well. At 2:30, Ellie left for her 3 o'clock appointment at the bank. Despite the midday heat and humidity, she enjoyed her walk up East Bay Street, taking note along the way of the restaurants, galleries, and boutiques she wanted to visit. Virgil Bates, she discovered, was a jolly little man with pink dots on his chubby cheeks. He opened accounts and transferred money before she had a chance to sit back in her chair and cross her legs. He sent her on her way with a wallet full of cash and a promise that her cards and checks would be in her possession by week's end. In no rush to return to her grandmother's dismal home, and feeling the need to stretch her legs, she walked several blocks north on East Bay before cutting over to Church Street. She ducked into a pet boutique and, on a whim, purchased a frou-frou bed for Pixie, a fluffy pink mound fit for a puppy who thought she was a princess. When she returned to the house on South Battery, she found Pixie bouncing around and barking excitedly as Maddie pretended to chase after her with the vacuum in the living room. When they noticed her standing in the doorway, Maddie turned off the vacuum, and Pixie stopped barking. Ellie faked a frown at her dog. "You've been holding out on me. I thought you hated the vacuum cleaner." Maddie unplugged the cord and wrapped it around the upright unit.
"I hope it's okay for me to let her out of her cage. I heard her whining. Saddest thing I ever did hear."
"I don't mind at all, as long as she doesn't get in your way." Kneeling down, Ellie clapped her hands, and Pixie leaped into her arms. She nuzzled the dog's neck and received licks on her face in return.
"Not at all. She's good company."
Maddie glanced at her Timex.
"Lordy, the day has gotten away from me again. Time for me to be heading home."
The day had flown by, but Ellie dreaded the lonely evening ahead. She trailed Maddie as she wheeled the vacuum down the hall to the utility room, and then stopped in the kitchen, where she retrieved her bag from behind the pantry door. She stood at the back door for a long time after her housekeeper's old Chevy sedan backed out of the driveway. In California, when she needed company, she called a friend. She knew no one in Charleston to call, aside from Bennett, who wasn't the type of friend she had in mind. What she was feeling was more than loneliness. Could it be that she was still not over losing Jake? Discovering Jake's secret life had shot a dagger straight through her heart. "You mean his legitimate life," Ellie corrected herself. His wholesome-looking, sandy-haired wife and her 2 snaggle-tooth clones were the real deal. He'd kept Ellie hidden and out of the way. He'd been in the shower that morning, when she decided to run down to the corner for the shirts he said he needed from the cleaners. She discovered the photograph when she'd gone into his wallet for money to pay for the dry cleaning. They'd never shared expenses, which should have been a red flag for her long ago. Jake had always visited her at her apartment in San Francisco, but never invited her to visit him in San Diego, where he claimed to live. He rarely took her out to dinner, seldom offered to pay for their takeout, and never reimbursed her for the money she spent on groceries to cook him gourmet meals. 6 weeks and 2,800 miles offered a clearer perspective on their relationship. She'd never loved him. Well, maybe a little in the beginning. Somewhere deep down inside, she knew he would never ask her to marry him. How could she commit her body and soul to marriage when there was so much about herself she didn't fully understand? She'd been in mourning since their breakup. Not the loss of him, but the loss of too much valuable time. Most of her 30s, biologically speaking, her productive years. Some of her friends' children were already in elementary school. Some of her friends were already divorced. Jake had been her only hope for ever starting a family. With her life in San Francisco over, and her new life in Charleston yet to begin. Ellie felt like a displaced orphan as she wandered around the downstairs rooms in the house. Seeing that Maddie had set up a wooden card table and chair in the Florida room, what she now referred to as her studio, even though her things had yet to arrive from California, warmed her heart